Wednesday, June 10th, up about 10 o'clock to see to getting a car. For Mary Ellen, Mary, now growing up tall and slim and wearing glasses. And Will, so manly, but growing too and his voice about to change. Three of them left sightseeing. I had my third cup of coffee with the West in their room and the Chambers. The Chambers were about to leave to go to the hotel, clad in tux and evening dress. And I said, whoa, not unless we all want a few columns. So let's just lend your key to Ashton and she'll go out and get you some changes, which she did. The Wests are going on to New York later in the evening. But Neva and Dee stayed for lunch with me. And as always, I got Neva to help me some on interior decoration. The solarium, which after all, I probably will leave until the great question is decided, and showed them in detail all the rooms. After they left, I got a bit of work done on the mail, and then at 5:30 was the really big event of the day, the ceremony for the presidential scholars. This is one of the best conceived and best planned things that has happened since Lyndon has been in here. Although in execution it lacked a little. It was the brainchild of Dr. Eric Goldman. Two high school graduates from each of the 50 states, and then some from the District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, and a few at large, totaling 121, had been chosen as presidential scholars by a commission headed by Milton Eisenhower, and having on it such people as Senator Fulbright, our own Bill Hagerty, now of Drexel, Dr. Jean Noble, and Mrs. Luana Trout, the teacher of the year. They were chosen for intellectual attainment and potential. The students were to receive from Lyndon a medallion designed by that distinguished, if controversial, sculptor, Jacques Lipschitz, that I had met at the Museum of Modern Art. They were not to receive a scholarship, but most all of them had already been awarded a scholarship, or were assured of going on to college. The idea was to spotlight excellence, to applaud intellectual attainment in a country where there has been so much accent on attainment in football. The children had had a marvelous day in Washington, beginning with a briefing by Secretary of State Dean Rusk, then a tour of the Capitol building and lunch with their own senators or congressmen, and then a briefing by no less than astronaut Alan Shepard, I expect that's what a lot of them like best, in the NASA auditorium, and then to the Supreme Court, where Chief Justice Earl Warren talked to them. And then, at 5:30, here to the White House for the presidential reception. When we entered the East Room, the familiar gold chairs were in a semicircle. The 121 students and as many of their parents as could come were seated, along with quite a few of the members of the commission that chose them, and a glittering galaxy of other guests. George, I thought Lyndon's speech was one of the best I ever read. Although, unhappily, it was not the very best Lyndon who delivered it. Later on, I found out why. Southeast Asia, coming to a boil, is nailing him to his desk in studying about it, and in constant meetings with everyone in state and defense concerned with it. I love the lines in the speech where he talked about demagogues and dictators believed of your parents' generation that American youth would prove soft, would love luxury more than liberty, choose comfort over courage. Your parents proved that calculation wrong. Today's cynics and doubters believe of your generation that you will be too content with the average to take on the arduous, too concerned with conformity to be creative, too cool to be committed, too callous to be caring. You will prove this calculation wrong, too. Your destiny will not be a faceless and thoughtless existence in a dull and dreary society. I believe the destiny of your generation and your nation is a rendezvous with excellence. Early in this century, William James answered those who complained that our democracy had an instinct for the inferior. He said, "The best of us are filled with a contrary vision of a democracy stumbling through every era, till its institutions glow in justice and its customs shine with beauty. Our better men shall show the way, and we shall follow them." Today, as never before, we must look to our better minds to show the way toward our society's greatest day. That is your challenge and your duty. You are exceptional members of an exceptional generation. You have been born to man's most exceptional opportunity. You are younger than most of the Earth's quarrels and older than most of the Earth's governments. You are younger than most of man's ignorance and older than much of his knowledge. Since you were born, Man has developed both the capacity to destroy human life and the capacity to make life worthwhile for all the human race. And then all the congratulations, and then a handing out of the medal and calling of the names and the states to each of the 121 students. A handshake with them and a big glow for me, particularly as certain of them filed by because I had been reading the biographies. Of the 121, I expect you would have to arrive at the conclusion that an economically comfortable home with stable and happy parents is more likely to produce excellence. But there were wonderful instances of those who had risen above all obstacles. An Arkansas boy whose father was a machinist and mother a laundry maid. His school counselor says he comes from a home so poor one would hardly believe it. He supports himself by tutoring, and he's first in his class of 660 and wants to become an organic chemistry major at the University of Arkansas. Another, a girl from Shreveport, whose mother was a clerk typist and father believed dead, in quotes. She had been shunted around among grandparents and aunts all over the lot because of a broken home, and then in the sixth grade she'd been in a serious accident and been hospitalized for many months. In spite of that, her grades were excellent, and she wanted to go to the University of Southwestern Louisiana and become a high school teacher. And then there was a young boy from Denver whose father was dead and his mother completely disabled. He worked at nights and after school to put himself through school. His counselor says he does not complain or offer excuses. He ranks very high in all scores, and he works toward becoming a professional musician or lawyer at Columbia University. And probably the top student was only 15, a New York boy, Kenneth Minkoff, first in a class of 1,265, heading for studying mathematics at Harvard. And then one, an Illinois boy who is totally deaf, but he's won awards in science and in English and a school letter in wrestling, and he's heading for Oberlin College to become a scientist or engineer. There was one from Hawaii of Chinese extraction, two from Puerto Rico with Spanish names, both of whom had received the highest PSATs possible in math and verbal ability. One of my regrets is that there's nobody with a Latin name from Texas or from California. There are some great success stories among the Negro students. A girl, Jacqueline Evans, one of the first to be integrated in Little Rock, father a nurse's aide, mother a teacher. Her counselor says she's gained the respect and admiration of her fellow students by the excellence of her work. She plans to attend Radcliffe and be a creative writer. One, a Negro boy from New Orleans, son of a mail carrier and a teacher, that teacher recurs over and over. His principal says he's the best student we have ever had. He plans to go to California Institute of Technology and become a nuclear engineer. And then, the son of the dean at Howard, a Negro boy, Frank Snowden, first of his race ever to be admitted to St. Albans, and graduated first in his class and also a good athlete. There were others whose fathers and mothers were elevator operators, cashier wrappers, car wash workers, who had managed to be first in their classes of several hundred. After you read these biographies, you couldn't help saying, America, God has shed his grace on thee. Congratulations over, we went into the state dining room where there was a lemonade bar and drinks circulating for the older ones. And here is where I think our own planning broke down, because our marvelous galaxy of guests should have had name tags to identify them.